From KMUW Wichita.
From Toronto, Ontario.
And from Armenia, Spain.
This is You're Saying It Wrong. Let's talk words. Let's talk about two countries separated by a common language. Well, and an ocean. I'm Fletcher Powell, host and producer at KMUW in Wichita, Kansas, and joining me, as they do each week, New York Times bestselling authors Kathy Petras and Ross Petras. Hello, Kathy Petras. We are hurtling on toward autumn or fall or whatever we'd like to call it. Are the leaves changing yet there in Armenia, Kathy?
No, but we do have grapes now on the arbor right outside my office window.
Oh, is that a sign of autumn?
I have no idea. I'm not a horticulturist, but we got grapes, okay?
Actually, it is, because I come from, believe it or not, we have a huge wine growing area right south of us, and where grapes are all over the place. So it is a sign of autumn.
I had no idea. That's exciting. Also, I didn't know there was a huge wine growing area right south of Toronto.
Oh, it's huge. Yeah.
Wow.
Niagara-on-the-Lake, it's like a really good zone for wine. It's really good wine too. It's not like some sort of plonk, you know, sweet. Oh, this tastes real good. No, it's really good. You know, thanks. And you pour it down into the plant and the plant dies.
No, it's probably dies. Yeah.
No, they have a lot of wineries. They're really good wineries.
Well, of course, that was Ross Petras there at his home in Toronto, knowing a lot more about local wine than I realized he did. Ross, also, I understand you've been translating 800-year-old books.
Oh, yeah, Fletcher, it is. We were talking about it earlier. We got a book. It's from, I think, 1240. It's about 1240. The manuscript is about 1240, and it's really cool. It's written on vellum, which is like a leather in red and black ink. And we thought it was something, and it's not something. It's something else. But it's really tricky Latin, and I spent the entire weekend. I'm bleary at this point and cross-eyed, as you can see. But it was fun too.
Well, I mentioned that it's nearing autumn, nearing fall. I have always sort of wondered why we have both of those words, and if there's a certain area, certain region maybe that uses one more than the other. Do either of you have any idea?
We have many ideas, and you will hear about them in a moment. Because you, like other people, the whole fall autumn thing is something that pretty much every year, haven't we, Ross, every year? I don't think we've missed one. Somebody or many write in saying, why fall, why autumn, what's the difference, etc. And we got this time an email from Lance in Jersey City, who wrote, love your show. I had to say that. Thank you, Lance. We like hearing that. More praise is good praise. And he said, I have a quick question you might have answered before. Is it true that it's only Americans who say fall, that everyone else says autumn? And if so, why?
We can answer that very quickly.
But we won't.
It does get a little tricky. Basically, Americans tend to say fall. And in England, it tends to be autumn.
Hmm.
But there's a lot of debate over fall and autumn. And you didn't have Google Ngram or computer programs there to figure what happened here. I was arguing with Kathy for that fall was more generally used than autumn. Kathy was arguing that both were pretty much generally used.
We think, as Lance, who wrote it, we always talk about Americans use fall, Brits use autumn. However, as Ross has said, fall was used before, at the same time as autumn, as early as the 1500s. So that's in the 14th century. They used to use the word fall.
Mm-hmm.
They also, though, used the word autumn.
Yes, they did. But I think the real key point here, let's skip all this problem, because they didn't use either term earlier. The earlier term was harvest or harfest, which basically, we were talking earlier about grapes. It was basically the idea that this is the season of picking and plucking. And that was generally used for fall or autumn. And that would have created no problem for Kathy and me, because then we could both agree on that. Right, Kathy? They used harvest.
I also got to say, Ross, I like that term that you just used, the season of picking and plucking. I think that's very nice. I like that. That's very poetic. It's very poetic.
Ate a bunch of delicious Ontario grapes just before we came on air. So I have to say, it's a wonderful season.
Well, Ross, I could lean out my window and pluck some Armia grapes. But quickly, we have to go back to, we said, why is it called fall? It was called fall, they think, from the, obviously, the fall of the leaf. It's like when this is really a tough, I'm making a leap here, but probably it's because leaves are falling, right?
Yeah, you'd figure.
And they think that spring came from the spring of the leaf. The leaf is springing.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll talk about that in spring.
Okay, but I'm going to throw something else out for both of you. Do you know where autumn came from?
Autumnus.
Yes, but do you know where autumnus came from?
The Latin.
Right, yeah.
Actually, this is sort of cool because they don't really know. But there's some speculation that autumnus from Latin is from a lost language of Etruscan. And there was apparently some god who was a seasonal god called Vertumnus or Vertumnus. And the V dropped out.
Is that where C.S. Lewis got Mr. Tumnus from, I wonder?
Probably.
I don't know. That's very possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But they think it may have come from that god. And, you know, no one knows much more about it because you can't ask the Etruscans because they've been long gone. They're dead. So anyway.
But going back to autumn and fall, we got to finish this somehow. Basically, yeah, they both were used. Brits went back to autumn more. It's not really a shibboleth, because that's what people were saying it was, right? That American says fall, and that would be a shibboleth, but it's not.
Basically, if someone walks in and says autumn, I'm going to probably, and you have to guess where the person comes from. I would guess the person probably, if they say pick right now, British or American, I would guess an autumn user would be British more often than a fall.
I would say the opposite. I would say, not the opposite, but I would say I think that if someone said fall, I think they were an American. But if someone said autumn, I would not know.
I use both.
I almost never use autumn. I think I always say fall.
What do
fall
other people? What do other people in Canada say?
Oh, no. I don't know. It's such a weird thing. I don't really know.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to listen now. And I mean, the problem with a lot of times with language is you just automatically, you know, put it into a picture.
Yep.
So if they say autumn, I don't think I would like notice, oh, they're saying autumn, even though I just said if you were asked to specifically, but I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm going to try it out now this weekend.
Yeah. I mean, if you asked me what people around here say, I mean, I would say, oh, I guess they probably say fall, but I'd never think one way or another if they said autumn.
Yeah.
So
I wouldn't either. I mean, I would if you said basically identify this person as like a test, but that's like specifically, okay, let's move on here. Yeah.
You know, though, this is something that happens when we start to talk about the words Americans use versus the words people in the UK use.
And speaking of that, we're going to try out, Fletcher, on some of these words that pop up in UK. And let's see if you know the corresponding word in American English.
Oh, gosh.
I.e., you're going to translate it from British English and help out us in America, or those theoretically in America, with the word.
Hopefully I don't make people eat something that will make them sick or something like that by mistranslating what we're talking about.
Okay, the first word, Fletcher, do you see it?
The first word, I believe, is courgette. Courgette?
Yes.
C-O-U-R-G-E-T-T-E. A courgette.
It's a fast car like a car.
Yeah,
Corvette.
Right, exactly. No. That's what. Now, this is something you eat, I'm pretty sure, but I can't quite remember what it is. I remember hearing this on, like, you know, the British Bake Off or something like that.
Yeah, you always hear it on those cooking shows.
But what's a courgette?
I'm going to give you a hint. It's like the old joke is that, like, people leave these on your doorstep because they're growing so many of them.
I was going to say, is it like a zucchini or something?
Yes!
Oh, it is a zucchini. Okay.
The et part is a French diminutive. So it's the courge is the word, and then it's courgette, which in another word is marrow, which we don't use either for them. I think
marrow
the Brits always
fascinates
use
me.
Because Poirot is always growing marrows.
And, is marrow also zucchini, or is it just a different kind? Is it more general squash?
It's general squash.
Yeah, okay. That one's really confusing to me because the only marrow I know is in your bones.
Yeah, because I was like, Ross just said that about, whatchamacallit, Hercule Poirot was always talking about his retiring growing marrow. So I was, what the hell is he doing in that garden? really?
But it was also sort of interesting because it used in English itself, in England English, it was basically written in italics as a foreign word. And then the food writer Elizabeth David, who my wife loves, basically dropped the italics in the 1950s, and then it became a general word in British English, which I thought was sort of cool, the power of a writer.
What, did they call it a zucchini ever?
Apparently, no. Apparently, zucchini came in the States from Italian immigrants.
Yeah, okay.
So we get the Italian name as opposed to the French name.
Mm-hmm. I like the Italian name better. I like zucchini. That's fun.
Me too. I don't like eating it particularly. I'm not a zucchini
really?
Fan.
Oh, I love zucchini. No,
I never cared for it that much.
But you know what the weird thing gets me about how you look at things? We were talking earlier about looking at words and not thinking about them. When you look at zucchini, automatically is an American word to me. And I don't think of it as Italian particularly, just as American. And then courgette looks really foreign. If someone said courgette, I go, that's a foreign word. Zucchini, of course, that's American. Right.
It's very odd here living in Spain, because when you get your English menus and stuff, or they translate stuff for you, it's always usually the foreign. It's not the American. And I have to do a double take, because I'm like, it's like too removed for me. You know what I mean?
Oh,
it's like,
boy.
First you got it in Spanish, then you've got it in, like, in my mind, fake English. You know what I mean?
Sorry.
I don't mean it that way.
There goes our British audience, Kathy. Well, that's it for that.
I know it's real, but you know what I mean. Okay, which brings us to aubergine.
Oh, yeah. Aubergine, another food. This one I do know for sure. An aubergine, A-U-B-E-R-G-I-N-E. Also definitely a food. This is an eggplant.
Yes.
We had a big debate about putting this one in, because I basically felt like I knew it. Kathy knew it. You know it.
Yes,
how common?
I will say this. I host a grown-up spelling bee each year, and either this year or last year, I can't remember, one of the words I used was aubergine, and the person spelling the word had no idea what an aubergine was.
Oh, okay.
I think a lot of Americans don't realize that an eggplant is an aubergine. An aubergine is an eggplant.
Yeah, we just had some last night. I just love eggplant.
Well, did,
this
did
is a word that's interesting. Pardon me?
I was going to ask if you drove to an aubergine restaurant in your estate car.
This one really gets Kathy and me.
Well, both of us read so many British books. I was talking about estate cars. And again, we go back to when you're a kid, you go, I don't know what it is, but okay, we're driving a nice car. You know?
But I always pictured a really fancy car with like a
chauffeur. Well, don't give him any chauffeur.
Sorry. Okay, what does it mean, Fletcher?
Right, so I have no idea what an estate car is. I'm going to guess it's like a limousine.
No.
That's what I would have thought.
Right? No. All it is a station wagon.
Really?
Yes.
Is that a killer? Car. I would never have thought that.
Wow.
And it could either be a horse-drawn or a regular car, basically to take you from your train station to the country estate. But it wasn't necessarily fancy. But what really got me the most was station wagon. When I looked at it, something I thought, that's a weird usage too.
But you realize, though, it's exactly what an estate car is. It's taking from the station. It's the station wagon.
Yeah.
I never thought.
I never thought of it either until a couple of days ago. I looked at it and I thought, wow.
Yeah, no.
Wow, I had no idea.
I know. And in effect, we're not laughing, but we're saying, gee, it's so odd the Brits use the word estate car for station wagon. Well, they're going to say they use weird words.
Station wagon.
I know. Oh, one little quick thing, though, a little digression here. Basically, you have two countries, you know, two huge areas, North America and Britain. Yet why are we separated by these languages? Do you have any idea why are we doing it, and what words basically would be different in both languages?
Oh, I mean, I didn't think that there was necessarily one particular strong answer to that. I assumed it had a lot to do with language developing, you know, separately at some point and with immigrants and that sort of thing.
Exactly. That's pretty much the key. I mean, we have the United States. Well, it wasn't the United States then. It was the colonies. But around the 17th century, you've got a split. You don't have a computer. You don't have telephone, telegraph, or anything like that. So you start getting two different twigs off the main branch, if you will. Mm-hmm.
But what the interesting thing is, a lot of recent terms, like we're talking about a state car and station wagon. You know, nowadays, even when they had, even in the 1930s, you could easily, you know, hear radio shows from England. You could talk to English people all the time. Why then did those words, why are those words separate? The key thing really seems to be that with words that are technologically based, things that are going really fast, changing mm-hmm. really quickly. Mm-hmm. Those tended to have, in England, they would say, I mean, like you had station wagons suddenly whipping around cars, everything. Those words where things are rapidly changing would have real differences. Mm-hmm. Station wagon, a state car. Kathy, also, you had said fashion, though, which was sort of interesting.
Well, that always fascinates me because, I mean, I love clothes. I mean, I love fashion and stuff like that. And fashion, because you don't think of fashion as like an incredibly fast-changing industry. You kind of think of clothes as clothes. That like happens really quickly, too. So if you're separated, even though you can communicate, you've got boom, boom, boom. This is in, this is in, this is in. And then the other side, you got this is in, this is in. And we're all saying the same thing, but not. We're right. talking about the same thing. So it's what you're saying, Fletcher. It is. It is. You've got these two tree trunks at this point that are quickly changing the certain words.
Including like new foods that come in as well.
Sure.
Coriander, cilantro, barbecue, grill, broil, barbecue, that whole thing too. Again, fads, things like that quickly change. The two countries separate, the two areas separate.
Yeah, which and leads we have immigrant populations that are not exactly the same as well.
Right.
That influence the language.
Right. So the Brits are growing their marrows while we're, you know, chopping up zucchinis. So you're
yeah.
right.
It is interesting, though, because I find here, because the expat community is certainly not all American. It's not very much American at all. It's mainly British, South African, Australian, and stuff like that. And I have to do double takes a lot because I'm in the minority and people are saying things. I'm like, the what? You know what I mean? The who? You know? And then I do the click, 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 you know.
Yeah,
and this
what
is
it
one
is.
Of the ones, this is a word that comes up a lot. And it's related to clothing. It's trainer.
Oh, trainer. Yeah. Trainers are shoes, like just like sneakers, tennis shoes.
Yeah. Or in Canada, they're running shoes.
Well, they're running shoes in the United States.
Yeah. But that's that's a specific thing. Like, I wouldn't call just like my sneakers running shoes.
No, nor would I.
But Ross, you're saying in Canada, they just call just your basic sneakers running shoes rather than
tennis
shoes?
I've heard running shoes a lot. I'm probably mm-hmm. going to get like 5,000 letters now saying, are you crazy?
But I'm fascinated, though, as an American by tennis shoes because I have never used tennis shoes in my life.
Are you serious? Mom used it all the time.
I never have. I'm saying
mom,
I never
our mom
did.
Said it
Randy,
all the time, tennis
well, that's
shoes.
She's from the South, I think, and Randy does it. He always talks about tennis shoes, and he's from, like, California. I say sneakers. I say sneakers is it.
I say sneakers completely. But you know the weird one for me was gym shoes. I've heard gym shoes. I just was thinking about it the other day.
That sounds very 1950s or something.
It does. Well, I guess I don't know.
How old are you, Ross? What haven't you told us?
Okay, the next one, though, Fletcher, I really want to hear you, because this one tantalized me as a kid. Public school.
Right, so here in the U.S., we know what public school is. I think is it the opposite in Britain?
Yes.
Like, public school
yeah.
is what we call private
yeah.
school?
Uh-huh.
That's so weird. Why? Do you know why?
In the 18th century was the birth of the British public school, and it was when grammar schools, they don't call them grammar schools, but whatever, we'll call them grammar schools for the sake of argument here, elementary schools, got bigger and bigger and bigger. So they would take in students that, for the people that could afford to pay the fees that would not ordinarily be charged to the people that lived right around there. So they were called public because they were allowing people who weren't right there.
They were not local schools. They were open to the more general public. And then they basically also became transformed because the idea was that you were going to go from there, even though you didn't have to necessarily, you were going to go to some of the great universities like Oxford or Cambridge, and from there enter into public service. So again, that could be another origin for the term.
It just gets me, though, that because I had the same thing, Ross, when we read books as kids, and they were talking about, whoa, he's going to public school. And I was like, what's the big deal? I go to public school.
I know. I had the same thing. It really fascinated. I got all confused on that.
Yeah, I know. To this day, it just makes me
here?
A little tense.
Okay, Fletcher, next word, when you go to the chemist.
The chemist. Yeah, this... Is this like just going to the pharmacist? Is that what a chemist is?
Not even. It's just the drugstore.
Drugstore.
Oh, wow. What, it's just like going to Walgreens or something?
Yeah, you're buying a toothbrush.
This one also got me when I first read it as a kid, because again, we were reading all these British books, and I had visions of like, you know, little Mortimer going to this guy and who's like, has like, you know, test tubes pouring it.
Well, Ross, do you remember the family from One End Street and Kate has to go?
And
the bottle breaks and she has to go to the chemist. And I was like, whoa, she's going to the chemist. This is big.
Get some test tubes ready.
Wait, so if I just want to buy some cotton balls or something, I have to go to the chemist?
Yes.
Ay, ay, ay. Okay.
But the chemist actually usually has, oddly enough, a pharmacy department.
Right.
But I mean, call that. So.
Oh, there's a pharmacy inside the chemist?
Yes. Often.
This next one, I'm a little curious where we're going with this. The word is pants.
That sounds silly.
Here in the U.S., of course, pants are slacks and trousers and even jeans, really, are pants here. I do know that the British often use pants to mean something is really not very good. That's pants.
Ooh, I love that. I didn't know that.
Oh, you didn't know that? Yeah.
But I want to start using them. That's pants.
I like that.
Okay, so I guess that's not where we're going with this. I do not know then what pants are.
Pants are underwear.
Underwear.
It's that simple. It's that simple and that blunt. Usually you say, you know, oh, you've got to get some clean pants since you want clean shorts or panties. In the U.S., pants is obviously trousers, slacks, jeans, or whatever. And it came from pantaloons, of course.
Do you know the origin of pantaloons? That was sort of cool. It's a silly character in Italian comedy who wore glasses, slippers, and tight trousers over skinny legs.
Oh, funny.
And basically those skinny legs got people going and it became pantaloons and then pants.
That's interesting. I love
that. Isn't that interesting? And it was seen as sort of vulgar, actually.
What gets me is I love things like Project Runway. So I said I always like clothing stuff. And in fashion, I remember that when I was originally in retail, you would talk about the pant. Look at that pant.
Pant.
Yeah, which is a very fashion industry term, the pant. Like you say trouser as the same way instead of the plural. And I thought that that was like just like from the garment district in New York or something. But apparently they started talking about the colloquial singular pant back in the 1800s.
So what is it? I'm curious. So say this again. Like, what is a pant?
It's a pant. It's a pair of pants. But you go, that is a lovely pant.
So the buyer doesn't go, I've got a great, you know, a great line of green pants. You say
you would say that, but you would say something like, now this line has this extremely slim pant with the broad shouldered. Yeah, it's just a thing. Yeah.
Well, we could also we could eat a pudding while we're talking about all of this. Couldn't
we could. This one, I mean, I know it because my wife is such a food bug, but I did not know it for years. So what is a pudding?
Well, so I've heard pudding refer to sort of dessert generally, not necessarily a specific kind, but that also could be me hearing people talk to their kids and just say, what are we going to have for pudding after, you know, after the meal?
Well, I'm going to ask you the original meaning of pudding.
Oh, wow.
In England.
The original meaning of pudding in England was probably something you didn't even eat.
Not sure
you might not want to.
Let's put it this way, though. I'm going to give you three foods, and you tell me which pudding is most related to.
Okay.
Okay? Custard, jelly, or a hot dog?
I guess a hot dog. That's the one that seems the most out of place there.
Yes.
Oh, so like a mixture of tossed off bits.
Yeah, in the entrails of a pig or a sheep, you know,
right.
Or a cow, I guess.
What is it now? I mean, generally, what do they mean? They.
What it is what you said. Mean? Dessert.
It
is
dessert.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's like what's for the pudding course, and it'd be like, I have this cake, you know.
Yeah. Okay.
Not the sausage.
There are plenty of savory puddings, though. Still, aren't there?
Yes, there are. There's still savory
puddings.
Use
that word, yeah.
Yes, there definitely are. It's basically, I think it's like a dish with flour, milk, and eggs.
I don't know about you guys. I'm getting hungry now. Are you? Really, I am. I wouldn't mind a sausage.
Mm.
Okay, next word is fringe.
F- fringe. Yeah, this one I don't have any idea. I've had a decent idea for most of these. Fringe, I have no idea.
I'll give you a hint. It has to do with hair.
No, I'm still...
Okay, I'll give you another hint. You have to look at me.
Your bangs?
Yes!
Oh, really? That was Kathy tugging on her bangs or fringe, I suppose. So they call your bangs your fringe?
A yes. Fringe.
Huh.
But that's an interesting one. That's a sort of like a fashion one right there, you know? Because we have fringe. I mean, it seems like people are cutting hair and then they... You know, it gets fashionable and they figure it out, what they call it.
It looks like a fringe, though. You think that means it's logical.
That one makes a little bit of sense. Why do we call them bangs?
That's what I was going to say. Fringe weird. Seems better than bangs. I
mean, well, they said it's from 1832 with horses, bang tail, which seems really weird to me, I have to say.
I think that makes sense, though, because if you look at my bangs right now, which don't look very good, I must admit, because I trimmed them earlier. But think of a horse and think of cutting the tail. It would look like this.
Yeah. But why do you call it bang tail, Kath?
Well, because the bang tails, you're banging off the hair. You're banging it off. You're doing it without any thought. You just go, poof, there goes the tail. Bang tail, that's what I have on my head. Fringe is much better. Fringe is way better.
I think fringe is a lot better. Okay, so let's have a biscuit and shut up.
Wow.
Bang. That was abrupt.
Now, our biscuits, I think, and again, I watch a lot of British baking shows, I guess.
Apparently. It's like,
yeah, I know. Fletcher,
you're right.
Right.
I'm hungry.
Biscuits are cookies, right? What we call cookies?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Hard or crisp cookies or biscuits in the UK.
So what do they call biscuits? Do they have biscuits?
Cookie.
Yeah. But like a good southern biscuit, do they have those? What do they call them?
Well, they say
chewy or dessert things are called cookies. But your point is like that sort of southern... That's a really interesting question. Do you know, Kathy?
No, I don't. I was thinking crumpets or scones, sort of.
Yeah, but that's not the same. I mean, like a buttermilk biscuit or something.
Yeah.
I'm starving, guys. This is killing me.
But, you know, actually, when you think about it, biscuit really makes sense. The British way makes more sense than the American way.
Because they were flat, weren't they?
And biscottum in Latin means twice baked.
Well, it's like a biscotti.
Is that where biscotti comes from?
Yes. It's twice baked, so it's hard.
Yeah.
So it makes a lot of sense. Our biscuit doesn't make sense.
I mean, basically, I'm going to go to England and order food and have no idea what I'm going to be eating.
Exactly.
You're Saying It Wrong is part of the NPR network and is produced in the studios of KMUW in Wichita, Kansas, by me, Fletcher Powell. Kathy Petras records from her home in Armia, Spain. Ross Petras from his home in Toronto, Ontario, in Canada. Torrin Anderson composed our theme music, and our digital team is Beth Golay, Kate Hutchins, and Carly Cooper. You can find all of our past episodes by subscribing to the You're Saying It Wrong podcast wherever you get your podcasts, or by visiting us at kmuw.org. If you have a question for Kathy and Ross, if you'd like to suggest a topic, or you just want to reach out, you can email me at powell@kmuw.org or email them at kandrpetras@gmail.com. You can also email us a voice memo of you asking it your question. You might get your voice heard on air. If you'd like to do the same thing by downloading the KMUW app, you can do that and just click the Talk to Us button. You can find all of Kathy and Ross's books pretty much anywhere you get books, and a handful of them are also available on audiobook, read by the authors themselves. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.
The candidates for November are set.
I know Donald Trump's tight.
Between now and Election Day.
We are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.